We're actually going to start over in John chapter 14, because Jesus makes a statement that is basically the basis of 2 John. So John chapter 14, and in verse 6, Jesus said to him, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me." And the book of 2 John expands on the idea that Jesus is the truth. It was written, as we have just read, by the apostle, the elder John, and to whom it was addressed has been debated. Some see the elect lady that's mentioned as a symbol of the church. But if so, who are her children then? And who are those who have known the truth and also love her? It just doesn't really match the grammar, especially in verse 5. It starts to break apart if we say it's the church. Some see this elect lady as referencing a specific but unnamed person whom John is acquainted with. And finally, there's also a contention that it is a named lady. In fact, the word lady in Greek is Kyria, and that was a popular name at that time. And so this letter could be addressed to a Christian whose name was Kyria. So in 2 John, let's go back and look again. In verses 1 to We're going to look at verses 1 to 3. "The elder to the chosen lady and her children, whom I love in truth, and not only I, but also all who know the truth, for the sake of the truth which abides in us and will be with us forever. Grace, mercy, and peace be with us all. From God the Father and from Jesus Christ, the Son of the Father, in truth and love." John has a genuine love for this particular woman and her children. But the same statement can be read that his love resides in the arena of truth. And truth is found within the gospel. Take a look at Colossians chapter 1. Colossians chapter 1, and in verse 5, "Because of the hope laid up for you in the heaven, which you have previously heard in the word of truth," the gospel. The gospel is that word of truth. "And a love that is shared by others is also to know the truth," is what Jesus said of his followers. Take a look at John chapter 8. John chapter 8, and in verse 31. So Jesus was saying to those Jews who had believed him, "If you continue in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free." Christians know the truth. Those who follow Christ know what the truth is. In fact, in 1 John chapter 2, and in verse 21, 1 John chapter 2, verse 21, "I have not written to you because you do not know the truth, but because you do know it, and because no lie is of the truth." This basis of shared love is all have shared the truth. Again, in 1 John in chapter 3, take a look at verse 18. "My little children, let us not love with word or with tongue, but in deed and truth." It's a love that's based on action. It's a love that is based on what truth is. And it's a lasting love, as Peter says in 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 22, "Since you have in obedience to the truth purified your souls for sincere love of the brethren, fervently love one another from the heart, For you have been born again, not of seed which is perishable, but imperishable. That is, through the living and enduring Word of God. We find in the world around us people trying to create unity, but it's not one that's based on truth. They fail to last because their foundation is not permanent. There can be no sincere love without a sincere love for truth. And that's John's point. We have to love the truth. If we continue on in 2 John, in verse 4, he says, I was very glad to find some of your children walking in the truth, just as we have received commandment to do from the Father. Now I ask you, lady, not as though I were writing to you a new commandment, but one which we have had from the beginning, that we love one another. And this is love, that we walk according to his commandments. This is the commandment that you have heard from the beginning, that you should walk in it. John rejoices that some of her children also walk in the truth. Now notice the word some. He didn't say all of her children do. Perhaps some are not old enough yet to walk in the truth. Perhaps some, because John only met a few in his travel and doesn't have first-hand knowledge of all of them. Or it cannot be ruled out that John knows that some are not faithful. But he prefers to focus on the good and not the bad. Whichever way it is, what he rejoices is the fact that some are following the truth. See, Christianity is not a claim. It's a way of life. And it's the things done because of what is within us. Take a look at Hosea chapter 14. I know we're talking about Christianity, but we're going back to Hosea. And in chapter 14, and look at verse 6, or 9, sorry. Hosea 14, verse 9. Whoever is wise, let him understand these things. Whoever is discerning, let him know them. For the ways of the Lord are right, and the righteous will walk in them. But transgressors will stumble in them. God's ways are always right. And that's the direction which we need to walk. In fact, Paul says in Ephesians chapter 5, in Ephesians 5 and in verse 2, walk in love, just as Christ also loved you and gave himself up for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God as a fragrant aroma. Walk in love. That's the direction we should take our lives. But he also says in verse 8, for you were formerly darkness, but now you are children of light. Walk as children of light. Walk in the light. Walk in, again, the truth. The knowledge of the truth and righteousness. Walking in darkness means we're not practicing the truth. In fact, John says in 1 John chapter 1 and in verse 6, if we say that we have fellowship with him and yet walk in darkness, we lie and do not practice the truth. And though John has commented on their common love, yet John pleads that she follows one commandment in particular, to love one another. And again in 1 John, take a look at chapter 3 and verse 11. For this is the message that you have heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. And it's the same message Paul mentions in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and in verse 9. Now, as to the love of the brethren, you have no need that anyone write to you, for you yourselves are taught by God to love one another. For indeed you do practice it towards all the brethren who are in Macedonia, but we urge you, brethren, to excel still more. There's no upper limit. However much love you have for the brethren, it needs to increase. There's always room for growth. If you look at love just as a feeling, have you ever thought of how odd it is to command love? How do you command a feeling? So how do you love? How do you love the brethren? It has to be something you do. And John tells us that we have to do the will of God. In fact, in 1 John 5 and in verse 3, he says, "For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not burdensome." Love is not a feeling. It's not words. It's deeds accompanying the words and the feelings. Take a look at what James says in James chapter 2. James chapter 2, starting at verse 14. "What use is it, my brethren, if someone says he has faith but he has no works? Can that faith save him? If a brother or sister is without clothing and in need of daily food, and one of you says to him, 'Go in peace and be warmed and be filled,' yet you do not give them what is necessary for their body, what use is that?" It cannot be just words. It has to be the deeds. And again, going back to 1 John chapter 3, this time to verse 17, John says, "But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? Little children, let us not love with word or with tongue, but in deed and truth. We will know by this that we are of the truth, and will assure our hearts before him." So love is the keeping of God's commandments. We go back to John chapter 14. This time we're going to look at verse 23. John 14, and in verse 23, Jesus answered and said to him, "If anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our abode with him." So love is the keeping of God's commandments. And unfortunately, it's a fact that very few in the world who claim to be Christians actually accept. Oh, their mouth claims to love God, but meanwhile, their feet run off to do evil. They are not practicing what they claim. And so John goes on to say in verse 7, 2 John, verse 7, "For many deceivers have gone out into this world, those who do not acknowledge Jesus Christ as coming in the flesh. This is the deceiver and the antichrist. Watch yourselves that you do not lose what we have accomplished, but that you may receive a full reward. Anyone who goes too far and does not abide in the teaching of Christ does not have God. The one who abides in the teaching, he has both the Father and the Son. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, do not receive him into your house and do not give him a greeting. For the one who gives him a greeting participates in his evil deeds. The world is full of false teachers, deceivers, people who act against Christ." Now, a prime example is at the time of this writing, there were people who were following after a practice called Gnosticism, knowledge. It was taught that the world was sin and the Spirit is good. So since Jesus had no sin, he couldn't have physically been in this world because the world is sin. And so that's what he's mentioned here. There are those who do not acknowledge it as Jesus coming in the flesh. John also mentions it in 1 John chapter 4. "Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits to see whether they are of God. For many false prophets have gone out into the world. By this you know the Spirit of God. every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is from God. And every spirit that does not confess Jesus is not from God. This is the spirit of the Antichrist, of which you have heard that it is coming and now is already in the world. And you might think, well, that's just, 2,000 years ago. We learned since then. No. The belief has made a comeback. There's a movie that was out called The Gospel of Judas. It's based on Gnostic writing. Even strangely, the Da Vinci Code, which was a very popular movie. It was a promotion of Gnostic writing. The idea that Jesus didn't really come in the flesh. False teachers following the goals of Satan will attempt to pull believers out of the confines of truth. We got to remember that false teachers are not always somebody out there. They can come from within our own midst. In fact, John warns in 1 John chapter 2, did I get a hold of it here? Did I skip a second? Looks like, oh, no, I got it. 1 John chapter 2. And in verse 18. 1 John chapter 2 and verse 18. Children, it is the last hour, and just as you have heard that the Antichrist is coming, even now many Antichrists have appeared. From this we know that it is the last hour. They went out from us. But they were not really of us. For if they had been of us, they would have remained with us. But they went out, so that it should be shown that they were not of us. And Paul warned the elders in Acts chapter 20. Acts chapter 20 and in verse 29. I know that after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock. And from among your own selves, men will arise, speaking perverse things, to draw away at the disciples after them. Therefore, be on the alert, remembering that night and day for a period of 3 years, I did not cease to admonish each one with tears. Even from among the leadership within the church, there can be people seeking to draw people away from the truth. And what John says in 2 John is that we got to be careful about going back. He says in verse 8, watch yourselves that you do not lose what we have accomplished, that you may receive a full reward. We can't go back into the world. We left the world to be saved. In a society of victims, we're always looking for someone to blame our predicament. John states that we are primarily responsible for staying in the truth. But notice also, yes, it's possible for Christians to fall away from the truth. In Hebrews chapter 12, Hebrews chapter 12 and in verse 15, see to it that no one comes short of the grace of God, that no root of bitterness springing up causes trouble, and by it many have been defiled. We could come short of the truth. And in Hebrews chapter 10, Hebrews 10 and in verse 35, therefore do not throw away your confidence, which has a great reward. So yes, there's a need to constantly watch out. We could fall away. We need to examine ourselves that we do not get drawn away from the truth. In Philippians chapter 2, Philippians 2 and in verse 12, so then, my beloved, just as you've always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. And yes, we're also going to have to be constantly on alert for Satan's next attack because he's not going to give up. in 1 Peter chapter 5 and in verse 8, be of sober mind, be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. But there's also a danger, not only of going back, but there's a danger of going too far ahead. We were kind of talking about that today. We got to stick to what God actually said. If we don't stay within the truth, then we're in danger of losing God. Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 6, now these things, brethren, I figuratively apply to myself and Apollos for your sakes, so that you may learn not to exceed what is written, so that none of you will become arrogant on behalf of one against another. Don't exceed, don't go beyond what is written. A lot of false doctrine are made to look appealing, because they're new, they're progressive. Look what we are able to do. How often do you hear people say, oh, we got to adapt the gospel for modern society. We got to make adjustments to it so that it will fit the modern world. That's not staying within the truth. Society needs to adapt itself to the truth. Take a look at 1 Peter chapter 4. 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 11. Whoever speaks is to do so as one who is speaking the utterances of God. Whoever serves is to do so as one who is serving by the strength which God supplies, so that in all things God may be glorified through Jesus Christ, to whom belongs the glory and dominion forever and ever. Amen. And so we're warned, don't desert the gospel. Take a look at Galatians 1. Galatians chapter 1 and verse 6. I'm amazed that you are so quickly deserting him who called you by the grace of Christ for a different gospel, which is really not another. Only there are some who are disturbing you, wanting to distort the gospel of Christ. But even if we or an angel from heaven should preach to you a gospel contrary to what we have preached to you, he is to be accursed. As we said before, so I say again now, if any man is preaching to you a gospel contrary to what you have received, he is to be accursed. So there's dangers about going back. There's dangers about going ahead. But there's also dangers about going with. Going back to 2 John verse 10, it says, if anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, do not receive him into your house and do not give him a greeting. For the one who gives him a greeting participates in his evil deeds. Extending fellowship, showing tolerance for false doctrine doesn't solve the problem a false teaching. Now, of course, in the Bible, we're told that we are to be courteous, we're to be hospitable, we're to do so for those who are without. For instance, in Hebrews chapter 13, Hebrews 13 and verse 2, do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by this some have entertained angels without knowing it. And we're to be hospitable to those within. In 1 Peter chapter 4 again, this time in verse 8, above all, keep fervent in your love for one another, because love covers a multitude of sins. Be hospitable to one another without complaint. But this courtesy is not extended to those who are blatantly advocating false doctrine. For instance, Romans chapter 16, Romans 16 and verse 17. Now I urge you, brethren, keep your eye on those who cause dissensions and hindrances, contrary to the teachings which I have learned, and turn away from them. It also doesn't extend to those who are blatantly living an immoral life. In 1 Corinthians chapter 5, 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 11, "But actually I wrote to you not to associate with any so-called brother if he is an immoral person or covetous or an idolater or a reviler or a drunkard or a swindler, not even to eat with such a one." And there's even those who maybe fall in the category of those who just deny the power of the gospel. They really don't believe it. In 2 Timothy chapter 3 and in verse 5, "Holding a form of godliness, although they denied his power, avoid such men as these." We don't give false teachers the opportunities to spread their false doctrines. We are people of the truth, abiding in the truth, loving the truth. Let's go back and look at what Jesus said in John chapter 14. In John chapter 14, look at verse 15. "If you love me, you will keep my commandments. I will ask the Father, and he will give you another helper, that he may be with you forever. That is the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive, because it does not see him or know him. But you know him, because he abides with you and will be in you." Love is an action. It's not a feeling. It's what you do. To love God is the specific action of obeying his will. And today we have an opportunity, the opportunity of your life, to put love into action, for only in truth can we be saved. I hope you'll think about these things. If there's anyone here who is not yet a child of God, we always leave open that there's an opportunity for you to become a child of God, to put on Christ through the form of baptism. And those of you who are our children of God would like the prayers of your brethren on behalf. We also leave that opportunity as well. Why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song that was selected.